Welcome to Everyday Driver, where cars are more than just transportation. They're freedom, a common ground, a way to grow, and can even make life better. We're here to help everyone find a car they love and discover all the ways cars connect us. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is The Car Debate. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Happy Tuesday. For Topic Tuesday, we have a very special guest that we are spending the next hour with. It's Jack McCauley. If you have ever used a computer mouse scroll wheel, or you've used USB ports, plugged anything into USBs, or used Guitar Hero, if you played Guitar Hero or Forza, you have met Jack and you've experienced his work. He has also designed and built the DK1 and the DK2 VR headsets for Oculus just prior to being acquired by Facebook. And he's also got a lot of patents for inventions, including software and audio effects, VR, and motion control. He is currently an innovator in residence at the Jacobs Institute for Design Innovation at UC Berkeley. He mentors students there. He leads R&D projects and lectures in courses on product design and design for manufacturing. But most importantly, he's a car guy, and we're calling him right now.
Hello?
Jack, it's Paul. You got both Todd and I.
How are you, sir?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Very well. Thanks for being with us, man.
Oh, no problem. It's an honor to be invited. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. When people ask you what you do, what do you tell them? Do you size people up? Do you go through the decision tree? Do you say, well, what are you into? What do you like? Do you like cars? Do you like
How do you explain
stuff? How do you explain what you do?
We'll circle back to everything Jack's done, because I guarantee all of you listening have bumped into something he's done. So I'm very curious, Jack, what do you tell people?
Well, I am by nature a car nut. And my entry into video games and doing the inventorship thereof was through cockpit games, driving games. Now, most of those higher end with the better resolution graphics type cockpit games didn't come around till after my career was well on its way. But that's how I got sort of started in that. I always wanted to have a Formula One car or a race car. But I didn't really have the time or the, you know, ability to, you know, revenue, whatever, to do that at the time.
The revenue stream was a little
massive
low.
Black hole of cash that is an F1 car. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So, and so that's how I kind of got on this thing. I was trying to build, I built steering wheels for arcade machines and so forth, and force feedback wheels, steering wheels, wow. Which in game controllers and things like that. That's what I was doing to try to improve the realistic cockpit experience, and which could segue into a nice conversation about Oculus VR and my interests there. But essentially what I was doing was trying to figure out a way to do a really good racing simulation or car simulation. So that's how I got started. But I have built cars. I've on my fifth car. The last one I finished in July of 2021, and that was 2020, and that was a Lola T70 that was built from the ground up. And a Lola T70 is, for those who know, is just like a Le Mans car from the late 60s, early 70s, with the high powered V8 engines, and super sleek body and nice paint, and you know, very sexy looking cars. So I built one of those, and it's built from scratch. I mean, I bought the body in England, car body, but from TW Moldings, which is off the original tooling. For Lola has a long history in Formula One, but mostly in sort of club racing, which is a low cost, you know, team racing type thing. But I bought the body from them and then redid all the vehicle dynamics, the suspension to run on radials on the street, because I always wanted one.
Okay.
A Le Mans car for the street.
I mean, was that the inspiration you chose Lola because, or was it just, well, that body's available of everything available?
No.
I guess there it is. I'll take that one.
You know what it is? I George Lucas, his first feature film, his very first film was a car film, a car oriented film filmed at Willow Springs. If you watch his history, I know he's done Star Wars, but he's kind of a car nut. American Graffiti, the film that was filmed at Willow Springs, which is like a student film, and then THX-1138, which was another sci-fi film from the early 70s. That's its first big budget movie.
Yep.
So to make a long story short, I'm also a sci-fi fan. I'm not a fan of the later movies, like the, you know, like the superhero movies and stuff like that, but I like dystopian sci-fi. And in one of his movies, in THX-1138, there was a Lola T-70, that retired race car that they used. They featured in the film, a couple of them.
Very cool.
And when I saw that, I said, someday I'm going to own. I thought it was really cool. I'm going to own that thing. Because in the movie, it had an airplane turbine engine in it and all this stuff. And in reality, it was just an old race car that they overdubbed with, you know, turbine engine sounds. Yeah. But so I decided I was going to get one of those someday. And so when I quit Oculus, I said, I'm going to buy the body. I'm going to make the body look like the movie car. And I'm going to build the movie car and drive it around. Well,
it's cool.
Yeah. I love that. What I love about that is an idea. And Jack, we're right here with you on this. That is an idea that an 8-year-old would have. And then when we're old enough to do it, we could still be enough 8-year-olds to go do it. And exactly. I love that you did. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, about halfway through the project, I lost interest in them, because here's the problem. How many have seen THX-1138?
Very few.
I admit I haven't.
The truth is the average person, I mean, I'm a geek and I'm a film guy, but the average person only knows THX-1138 because THX goes on to be the sound thing in front of all the George Lucas and the Indiana Jones films. And they're, THX, I kind of know what that. That's the only connection most people have to it whatsoever.
Sounds like now we should have George Lucas on as a guest and completely ignore the elephant in the room and just talk cars. People are like, but I've got questions about...
Hang on. Let's go back to Jar Jar Binks. What's going on?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what's interesting? Also, in American Graffiti, the yellow 32 Ford Deuce Coupe that's in that movie has a license plate that says THX-1138.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of carried that in. So
THX-1138 caught that.
That was my inspiration for that. And I also grew up in California. I'm essentially from here, but we, you know, it's a car culture in the late 60s and 70s. And it was cruising, Main Street, getting away from mom and dad, and all of those, the vehicle meant to me and probably impressed into my psyche freedom.
Sure.
And mostly getting away from mom and dad, but you know, just an escape. And I can remember meeting folks, you know, friends and stuff. You get in your car, and these are muscle cars from the late 60s, right? You get in your car, you go meet your buddies somewhere, and, you know, you do some things and you have fun. And, you know, it's just, that's what I grew up in. And I was immersed in that and immersed in sci-fi and just got just enthralled with it. I also saw a Formula One race when I was six. I went to, I was in Zandvoort Hall, and we were living in Hall at the time. My dad worked for the U.S. government, and we got moved over there. I went to a Formula One race, and those cars, the sound and the shape of the car,
sure.
I was completely enthralled with them. So fast forward, I go and, decide at a certain point that maybe my endeavor is to get into the car business. And the thing is, there's no car companies in Silicon Valley. Back then, there was Noonie Motors, but it was like a manufacturing facility.
Yeah,
they were essentially Toyotas. But there was no car industry here. There was semiconductors, operating systems, stuff like that. Mostly that Apple computer, literally very close to where I live, and that was it. So what are my options? Well, I could pretend to be in cars. And so I was thinking about that. I was like, you can actually, what if you could do simulations with vehicles and sit at your desk at your house? This was a thought that was occurring to me a long time ago.
I love it.
And of course, there was no high-end graphics, and Doom and Quake were coming out about that, you know.
Oh, yes. Doom and Quake,
oh,
for
God.
Sure. Keep going. I love it. It's great.
So, and I already worked in entertainment. I worked on Terminator 2, the movie. This was in the late 80s.
Yeah.
One of the guys that I, professor, my alma mater, hired me to help him, a hardware engineer by trade, and hired me to help him build some hardware, digital hardware. So I worked on that, and I got in entertainment, and it just blossomed from there. essentially. I mean, I had done some programming, games programming before this, very rudimentary stuff, but not with it, with the enriched graphics and so forth. And so I just got into it from there and got hired by various companies. Here's what I tell people when about my career and so forth is I have a lot of contacts in the business, and I maintain those relationships for years and years and years. I call people, "How you doing? Let's go get lunch." Well, not cutting right now so much because of COVID, but sure, let's go do some, you know, let's go out and have a nice tea or go to a barbecue or something like that. I stay in touch with those people. And the thing about it is I do know how to do the work. I know how to program, do the electronics and systems engineering. Those are skills that you learn on the job, and I'm good at it. I'm probably not the best at it, but I'm pretty good. I'm really good at it. But it's the maintaining of maintenance of relationships with people over decades that's paid off in spades. The job that I got at Red Octane, Activision/Activision, which is Guitar Hero, was I was recruited by a guy I worked for at Take Two who publishes Grand Theft Auto. GTA 5 is an amazing game, by the way. I love that game. And he recruited me because he got hired. He was a hardware guy to produce the hardware for Guitar Hero. First person he calls is me. I mean, it was a mixed relationship, a stressful environment. Sometimes I didn't get along with him very well, but I never burned my bridges, and I always stayed in contact with people, and it kind of gets remembered that way. Incidentally, this guy, when he needed a place to do his startup, I offered I have a commercial building. I gave him space at my commercial building, furniture, free internet, because he helped me, you know?
Sure. That's cool.
No idea what payout. There's nothing in it for me. And turns out he just sold his business. That they were a startup and he just got bought by a big conglomerate company. So he's done well. But it's like that, man. If someone comes and asks for help, I will help them. I'll drop everything and help them. I was taught that by my parents.
That's cool.
But it pays off in spades. And it isn't always an easy path in doing video gaming. It's very hard work. It's very stressful. You're working with a lot of super talented, finicky, strange people. the strangest and most difficult people to work for in video games are the sound engineers who want the sound to be just perfect. You know, they're so picky.
That's funny. Really?
They have that rap. I'm not saying that's true everywhere, but when I was at Electronic Arts, that was kind of true. It's like the guy is hard to work with, but he's a perfectionist, and the stuff is just amazing. Sure. So, you're working with artists, and it's a melding of art and engineering. And so you're working with really bright people who are very passionate about the work they do. It's art to them. To make a long story short, it's not always easy being in that world and working there. Oculus, there was certainly some downside of that operation and that thing, but there always is, and the world isn't a perfect place. But if you're, maintain these bonds with people, call them, it pays off because they remember you. And I got recruited to work for Oculus because of the relationships I built at Activision on Guitar Hero.
Interesting. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's the way that world. It's a small world. First of all, there's not that many engineers working in video games. If you want to talk about IT, there's 100 times more engineers working in IT than there are video games, a thousand times. So it's kind of a small world. Well, and you get recruited from studio to studio. So that's how the gigs kind of lined up for me.
Well,
so,
that's interesting, the small world aspect. And I think what you're saying about keeping those relationships up is hugely helpful. But the interesting thing that's dawning on me is we're talking about the small world of it. If I'm not mistaken, and please correct me, You're talking about being a car guy in that small world, and therefore you've worked on Forza, Gran Turismo, and Oculus, and Guitar Hero. So everybody listening has somehow bumped into something a project you were on, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's right. The modeling for the vehicle, incidentally, the car that's in Forza, the Ultimate GTR, is modeled from my car. A guy named John Kennedy modeled that thing, a 3D model for me. I have one of those. He scanned the thing in for me and modeled it for me, and that's who did this. And then that ended up in Forza, but it's a different color than my car. But
incredible.
That, Yeah.
I love so that actually brings up this question, and that is, what cars do you own? I mean, I want to come back to the Lola in a minute because it's fascinating.
I got
to
know about the
Lola.
But
what cars do you own, or what cars led to the Lola?
Well, I'll tell you the worst deal I ever made. I had a 68 Camaro SS that I restored in my driveway.
Okay.
In a really, really nice, posh neighborhood, much to the chagrin of the HOA and my neighbors. It was on blocks.
I love that image. That's great.
Perfect.
So the worst mistake I made in a vehicle was selling that thing. But the problem was, once I finished it and drove it around a bit, it started accumulating boxes and laundry in my garage. I mean, boxes piled up on top of it. And so I wish I had not sold that. But I did that when I built a 1926 Model T.
Oh my gosh.
From a car I found in a guy's front yard in San Leandro. I drove by one day and I said, that is a cool car.
Huh.
So I bought that
then
completely redid it in my driveway and garage. And then
Your neighbors love you. I can tell. Neighbors just love you.
Like, what's Jack building today? What's he building this week?
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, HOA is like getting letters in the HOA or something where you're, you know, you got to move. You're not a buy. HOA rules forbid you from parking trailers and, you know, junker cars in your. So after that, I did a Ultima, and the Ultima fitted with a Rolls V12, and I did that in my garage.
What?
But by that time, my garage had a machine shop in it.
Oh, wow.
And welding equipment and a milling machine and a lathe and stuff like that. So I built that. I took a Rolls engine out of a Silver Seraph. I got it in San Jose, took it all the way apart. First of all, they told me it was great. It was burned. The engine was overheated, so I had to rebuild it. But I stroked it. I put cams in it. I did all the camshaft design in an old program called DynoSim, which is an engine simulator.
And
you can put in the number of pistons and friction coefficients and so forth. It's like an engineering thing, right? So,
unbelievable. Rods a Rolls Royce V2? I mean,
well, into an Ultima as well.
Into an Ultima, I
love this, but it feels like the precursor to the Lola, though. It really does.
It kind of does. Going. You know what the recipe should be is that.
Yeah. Well, the engine work on the Ultima was the most extensive part because it has downdraft individual throttle bodies on it. So each cylinder in the engine has a throttle body sticking up. And
I like how you pick the non-complicated things.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know,
Jack's all about the simple stuff for sure. Yeah,
I had a vision of what it was supposed to look like in my head, and it was supposed to look like one of these '60s, like a Ferrari 312P GT cars is what I wanted it to look like. Those cars are so beautiful to me.
Yeah,
the late '60s Ferraris and Lolas and so forth. That's what I wanted it to look like. Like when you opened it up, you go, ah, I see the inspiration. So it does look like that.
Wow.
And like the old Colombo V12 from Ferrari, I wanted that look. And I actually looked on eBay to get a Colombo V12, but they're not that they're out of reach. It's just too much work to get it to work. So I found the Rolls and I said, well, it's a British car. It's got to have a British engine in it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
But the engine was reworked extensively and it's completely different. So let me tell you what the horsepower rating is, since this is a car show.
Okay, please.
After all that work, it put out a measly 400 horsepower. And that's because the V12 in that is a limousine engine. It's designed for low-end torque.
Yeah.
So it's got lots of grunt off the line, like for doing, if you want to do burnouts and stuff, it does that great. but it doesn't have the stellar horsepower range you see off of a, you know, like Motor Trend articles on the latest Corvette. It doesn't have that, but it's completely drivable. And it sounds like a Lamborghini when you're going down the road. You go, and it's really loud. I mean, all my cars are extremely loud. I mean, the vision I have is you hear it first and your head's looking around for it. And then it turns the corner and there it is. You know, that's kind of like the art part of it. So,
but that Ultima can't weigh much, though, I wouldn't think.
No.
No, it's extremely fast.
The engine's heavier than the rest of the car.
Yeah, for sure.
That car is an evil car. It handles like a slot car. It's so misleading. Wow. And they say this, Ultima, says this, and, you know, tells you this. You got to be careful because the adhesion limit of the tires is very high. So, you're driving around, you go, I could take that corner any speed I want. So I spun it twice, without incident. The third time I spun it, I hit was on the freeway and I hit the wall and destroyed the car.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I had insurance on it though, and the insurance company covered it. And they repaired it. $70,000 of the damage to what is essentially a kit car.
Well, yes, but I just keep thinking about 400 horsepower. And one, I mean, I own a Lotus Elise and I love it. Okay. And people are always asking questions about, you know, I literally had one guy at a gas station goes, "Does it have a V10?" I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. But, where would it go?
But the Ultima is in that same vein. And my point is, here's a car that doesn't weigh much. 400 horsepower on one level is like, oh, it's not that much. But in that car, it's got to be a rocket ship.
Yeah. It's, I did 160 on it. Well, I won't tell you where I did it, but I did. I was saying, where's the limit on this thing? And there is no limit. And the beauty of that car is so well engineered. It's professionally engineered.
Yeah.
The assembly part, it's not for an average builder. It's difficult. I mean, Ultima tells you, oh, you could do this in a garage in 300 hours. I spent like 2,000 hours.
Wow.
And I'm experienced. So, but the engineering on it is so spectacularly good. McLaren used that car as a mule for their powertrain on the F1.
Wow. I didn't know used, that.
Gordon
yeah, they did.
On the F1?
On the F1 ringing out the powertrain, the V12. They didn't copy the chassis. McLaren can do their own vehicle dynamics.
Right.
They used it to ring out the powertrain.
Huh. No kidding.
It's so good. The thing about it is the faster you go, the better it gets.
Mm.
And that's a great car. It is really, really well done. But you can sink a fortune into it like I did. I went crazy with it.
Well, you still have it, right?
I will never, ever get rid of another car after selling mine.
Okay, cool.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. All right. Okay, good. No, that's excellent. I love this story. This is great.
And working our way up the list. And then comes the Lola, starting in 2014. I went about trying to find a spare, like a used one. There are none. There are 50. They made 50 of them. So
LolaT70.com. Get all your parts here, right?
Exactly.
Well, there is a guy in Florida that makes spares for it, and they still make parts for it, like the uprights the that sit on the outboard part of the suspension that hold the brakes and so forth. But it's all primitive stuff. I upgraded the car. I mean, it's got Wilwood disc rotors and full set of Wilwood brakes, brake balancer, modern pedals, modern engine. I use an LS7. It's a bone stock LS7 because this time I didn't want to spend all my time, modding the engine.
You'd had that experience for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I did? I 3D printed an intake manifold with fake injection stacks on it. So it looks like it's got injectors on them.
That's cool.
That's incredible. I love that.
Open headers on the back. And so it's thunderously, it's a 427, right? So it's really, really loud. It's got a little lopey idle to it. So I just wanted the whole, if you stood next to like a McLaren M6 with that big Chevy in the back and heard it start, it just blows your mind. That's what I wanted. I wanted it when it goes kaboom.
Like human beings drive these things.
Exactly.
What on earth?
But it's intended as a street car. I mean, it's not intended as a
street
car, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a street car. Well, in regular driving, if you're not leaning on the throttle, it's not that loud.
Sure.
It's when you get on, when you start loading the engine down and putting fuel into it, a lot more fuel into it, is when it starts getting loud. So just in regular driving, it's loud, but it's not overbearing.
Please tell me you just drive to the grocery store in that thing or to go get coffee or something. Like, honey,
exactly.
It appears to be a Lola T70 coming around us in the left lane, think, from the late 60s.
It is. It's and the thing is that I set it up for radial tires. If you set the suspension up in a car for bias ply tires, I can get into tire tech because I went into deep dive into that. But essentially, the car is built around the tires. Mm. So I had to build the car so that it was tractable and safe on regular roads, city roads and so forth. So there means you have to use radials. You don't have to use radials, but finding bias ply tires.
Oh yeah.
They're sticky. They're too sticky. They have those too soft a material in the rubber and they pick up rocks and nails and stuff. So I ended up setting it up for Pirelli radials on it. It got great big, the biggest radials you can get on it. And so I set it up for that, and it's just a wonderful car to drive. The ride, it's just like a street, like a car you'd buy from Chevy or Ford.
It's not at all.
And yet it's not.
Yeah. You have to be careful and stuff like that because it's so powerful. This thing has got 520 horsepower and weighs 2,000 pounds.
Oh, wow. Cow.
Okay. Yeah, so you have to be super careful with it. And the other cool feature, and I know this is a car thing, is I have camera modules. It's so low to the ground, you're almost laying down like you're in a lounge chair, like a, you know, one of these teak lounge chairs by a pool. And then
it's exactly like that. Very relaxed. Yeah. You got a drink in your hand. It's perfect. Keep going.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I put cameras on inside the vintage looking mirrors. You know those?
Oh, sure.
Shelby style mirrors. I got those on the outside where I put camera modules in them.
Okay.
So to see the left and right side of the car, I have an LCD display inside of it that mixes the signal from the left and right camera, so I get like the Tesla experience of seeing it around the car. Cool. So when I'm backing it up, I can see where I'm backing up. I'm going to run into something. And it's got a hydraulic lift system on it. It's really low to the ground. You have to be very careful. And when I'm driving on regular streets, I raise the whole car up on hydraulics.
Oh,
the computer in there. So it's all computerized and it's a bunch of software and stuff. But so this one took me 5 years. And I worked on it a lot. I mean, I was traveling and so forth and, you know, doing this kind of stuff. But it took me 5 years, and now that it's finished, it's really good. It's just when you – and the other thing I do is I move the entire instrument panel to switches to the steering wheel. So now you can control the lights and other features of the car by pushing buttons on the steering wheel, and it's connected with a radio to a central receiver radio. So I use the radio – to control this. So I can take the wheel out just like a race car because you have to pull the wheel off to get out of the car.
Get in and out. Yeah.
Yeah. But all the electronics and the radio transmitters inside the wheel and the receivers inside the car, so I can walk around the car and control the lights and honk.
That's hysterical.
Yeah. So that's like going over the top again.
I love it. Is it still the yellow-orange color that's on your website?
It is. It's a... interesting colors, because what I did was I there's a local hot rod shop here that paint. I can't paint cars, so I send that out to get done. And I went through maybe 15 or 20 different sample sprays of what I wanted, and I still didn't get right what I saw in my head. It's very close, but what I saw in my head was sort of a yellow orange with white, but I couldn't explain to the guy exactly what that was supposed to look like. So we shot a bunch of tabs and samples of different paints and finally got it pretty close. But then after I painted, I said, this looks like a McLaren orange. It's not a McLaren.
I was going to say, it's a little papaya, like the McLaren papaya orange.
Yeah, color. It is. But that was not really intentional. It's just I couldn't get it right. I wanted an off, a cream yellow with pearl in it. And I couldn't explain to the guy. And every time he shot one, it wasn't quite right. And this was the best of the bunch. So
I mean, that's pretty good. Are there other really places to see the car other than your website? I mean, do you have photos posted?
Yeah, I have a video I can send you guys. And when we hang up here, or link to it on YouTube channel.
We'll post that link.
We will
for
definitely
sure.
post
love
that.
Share that with people.
And it goes through the whole genesis of myself getting involved with cars, including the race I saw at Zandvoort in the 60s that Jackie Stewart won that race. And I found video of that race online. And so I put clips of that in this video that I professionally shot and edited video that I did.
Yeah. We'd love to see that. That'd be great.
Yeah. Explains the THX 1138 and the inspiration for it. So
unbelievable. I mean, that race at 6 years old has literally defined your whole life, because we're talking to car enthusiasts. Car enthusiasts are listening and, we like cars a little bit. But that has, despite everything else you've done, defined everything to culminate in this.
Well, I was in love after that.
That's amazing. It happens to all of us. I totally get it. I'm actually really curious, because of this progression and because the key thing you said that I think is fascinating is how all of your cars are loud. But yet you've worked in a lot of like cutting edge tech, visual tech. And so I'm going to try to merge the two and ask this question, because Paul talks about this all the time. Paul talks about the fact that he's concerned that EV cars are going to lose sound, and sound does sell. And you're talking about how important sound is in your car. So what do you see in the EV world? Here you are, a guy that, I'll be honest, Jack, hearing your resume, I would expect you just went and built an electric Lola. And you didn't.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm just kind of curious your thoughts on those mergings of reality and what you think about the sound aspect.
Well, the first thing I saw that was the hybrid, first hybrid I saw was the Prius. And I said, is hazardous because you could walk in front of this thing, get hit by it. You can't hear it.
Yeah, true.
You hear the tires, but you hear nothing else.
Yeah.
But I've kind of come full circle, and I'll tell you what I did. Last year, we built two EVs. I was getting to that. One, and I have a videos I can send you guys of this thing. One, which is, it looks like a go-kart, and like all of the stuff I do, it's hyper overpowered. It's got way too much power. Okay. And it's beyond fast. It's literally about a foot shorter than a go-kart. It's all electric, powered by lithium ion batteries with controllers and software.
Wow.
And that's the first one. That was an exploration into to teach myself the EV tech. The second version we did is a hybrid with a small gasoline engine on it. And it, yes, they do have this issue where they're quiet, but I also have a Model X, and it makes a whirring noise like a UFO. Have you ever been next to one?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, sure.
It's a little disconcerting the first time.
Yeah, it's... I don't like that car that much. I've got also got a Chevy Bolt. You asked me cars, I got a bunch of cars. I got a Chevy Bolt, which I absolutely love.
They're cool, aren't they? We're big fans. Keep going.
That's a really, really good car. And I think Chevy, I don't know who built it. I heard it was not Chevy, maybe Kia or Hyundai or something like that. But whoever did it knocked it out of the park. I know they've had battery issues. When I teach electric vehicle engineering at UC Berkeley, when I teach electric vehicle engineering, I'm focused more or less. I teach the and the physics and dynamics of the Model S induction motor, but I'm like focused on what Chevy has done with the Volt. What they've done is they've built a universal electric motor powertrain.
Mm.
Now this thing can go in a truck. It's like the small block Chevy of electric engines.
Okay.
It's a complete powertrain control.
It's a good way of describing it.
Yeah, that's essentially what they've done. It's an engine that they can put in different platforms and reuse their reoccurring non-reoccurring engineering cost.
Once they figure out that little battery issue.
that is a struggle that a lot of just about every company has gone through.
Absolutely,
Tesla
is far ahead of Chevrolet, even I think, in terms of figuring out how to maximize battery life. And mine got recalled. I took it in. It went down about 40 miles in range. Big deal. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. It's not like it have the range.
Sure.
But this hybrid vehicle we built is a teaching platform. One, to teach myself about hybrids, and two, to try to figure out how to improve the efficiency of an EV.
Huh.
And I think that I partially accomplished the latter. And so in my view, the best combination of a vehicle is a small gasoline engine, but it's primarily an EV.
Okay.
And the way this thing works is this: if you park it, let's say you go to the store and you want to run into, Vons or wherever it is, as a grocery store.
Yeah.
The gasoline engine senses this, it turns itself on and tops the battery out. So that when you come out of the store, the battery's ready to go. It's topped out again. And the small gasoline engine runs at maximum efficiency. So it's running in its curve of efficiency exactly where it's supposed to be. And it's pretty close to full throttle, like an airplane motor, kind of like that.
Sure.
Okay.
So it sits there, it turns itself on, it charges battery. You get back in, it's ready to go. This thing, I've never charged it. I put a little bit of gas in it once in a while, but I never charged it. And it's wicked fast. It's scary, and I've come close to wiping out on it. just because I push it to the limit. Like the first thing I do when I get on is like, I'll see how fast it goes, but it's got full. This thing also does not have brakes on it. It does not have mechanical brakes. The braking is done through the electric motors.
Interesting.
Entirely.
It's got two electric motors on it, and there's enough torque to stop the vehicle, and it won't lock the wheels up, but it works great.
That's fascinating. So you've got some similarities here, actually, what Chevy did with the Volt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But keep going. This is fascinating.
Yeah, no mechanical batteries, no rotors, no disc brakes. It's all electronic braking. And this can be done with a couple of caveats. One is that the vehicle doesn't go very fast. the faster the vehicle goes, the less likely the batteries are to be able to take that kind of braking load, which is what we discovered. It's got two batteries, a braking battery and a propulsion battery. The braking battery is used to brake the vehicle. So it's essentially empty, let's say.
Yeah.
It brakes the vehicle. It absorbs the braking. If the brakes are on really hard, the second battery kicks in and takes the but accommodates the additional power coming off the vehicle, the slowing down power. So this is what we did. This, by switching these batteries like this, the discovery is that I can actually get this thing to stop really well. It won't skid. It doesn't have enough torque to do that. But it will wheelie.
That's the episode title. Won't skid, but will wheelie. I love it. That's good. That's very, very good.
Well, that's interesting because you think of it, the starting torque, it's taking current out of the motor, power out of the motor to wheelie, but it doesn't have the ability to charge like that with that wheeling power. You know, it's like it doesn't go two directions. With the second battery in there, it can do that because I'm taking the batteries and put them in essence in parallel to take on the additional stopping. This is the thing about electric vehicles. You could improve the efficiency a lot higher if you were able to manage the removing the kinetic energy from the vehicle and stopping. And Tesla, the battery wear on if you take the thing in to get a, how long do you need a brake job on a Tesla? Well, 250,000 miles, right? It's brakes last forever.
Right.
And that's evidence that they've managed this whole starting and stopping stuff pretty well. And the way their system works is like the brakes are electronically controlled. The brakes kick in when you're putting too much juice into the battery. So the mechanical brakes start coming in. Like the Tesla Model S, mine also has traction control. So that was an exploration to see if we could actually do traction control to keep when you're going around a corner or on ice or something like that, that you could do traction control and you can. It probably doesn't work as well as a gas-powered vehicle traction control, but it does work. And Tesla also does. It's got an electronic differential. It doesn't have a mechanical differential. The wheels have on either side of the vehicle are controlled independently, two different processors and two different control. Yeah. So, in essence, it's a teaching tool essentially.
Amazing.
Primarily to teach myself. So that thing this stuff is like never finished. I'll get it to a point where I'm pretty happy with it, and I had bigger plans for it, and then I figured that I've done enough on it that, I don't want to do anymore. I'm kind of getting bored with it. So, but it's, in essence, in the world, you asked me about the EVs and the noise. I think there's other benefits to an electric vehicle. First of all, if you like to go fast, which is what I like to do, you like a lot of starting torque, like wheelie starting torque, it has that. And a gas power car does not.
Sure.
I mean, a dragster, maybe top fuel car, maybe, but. Not short of that.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the drag race videos. Everything will be endlessly drag raced against a Tesla. Doesn't matter.
For sure. Yeah.
And sure, it wins. Great. But the noise part is still such a part of it. I've always thought, 911 flat sixes and, Chevy V8s and BMW inline sixes and those classic engines that just sound a particular way.
Oh, I like that too. Yeah.
Those sell. Just the noise alone sells. Yeah. It's a big part of people's reviews about the car. Yeah. This car doesn't sound good. Or, like the 718 came in with the four cylinder. People don't like that. It sounds too Subaru-ish. Things like
that. I
see.
I see. Yeah. Well, I think that eventually the public will get their head around that when they see the utility. Being able to, like my car, I have a level 2 charger in my house. I got solar panels and Tesla batteries. I've gone like crazy with it. Like,
sure.
I have 108 solar panels, which is enough to power like a village. I went overboard.
Well, you've got needs, I understand.
Yeah, I guess. I can run my CNC on it probably. I haven't figured that out yet. But
that's funny.
The world's first solar-powered CNC. That's interesting.
Well, I couldn't go halfway. And so, to make a long story short, I see the utility of being able to go home, and then you come out in the morning, and your car's ready to go. Don't have to go to the gas. I don't like going to the gas station. It's stressful. It's not as stressful as running out of a battery, because I run the battery and my bolt down to nothing.
I mean, that is stressful.
And that is very stressful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, like, but I also think some of your gas station frustration is probably from the fact that you're pulling in there in a Lola that you built yourself. I mean, that's stressful in and of itself. Yeah. Like, that has to be a difficult day.
But it's a crowd draw for sure.
Absolutely, I mean,
people, it is. Yeah.
But I'm curious. I mean, here you have all of this electric stuff you're dabbling in and you're learning and you're kind of retrofitting and if you will, deconstructing the stuff that's already being built and teaching on that. Mm-hmm. But on the side, you're building this monster Lola with an LS7 in it. So do mm-hmm. you see these worlds being parallel for a while? Because we talk about this in the podcast a lot. All of our audience is a little bit concerned because everybody's going, well, only electric cars after this date, which we think is a little bit fuzzy. But moving on. Yeah. But I'm just kind of curious of your thoughts about this simultaneous reality of we're liking cars, even you, we're liking cars that are gas and powerful and loud, but we're also curious about EVs because of their usability. Right. How do you see the parallel reality of those?
And what that'll do for enthusiasts, because we think, will there be a lightweight, fun enthusiast EV? Will it just be the first Tesla Roadster where it's a Lotus with a heavy battery and it just ruins the steering feel? Will there be?
Right.
Will that
I think there's room in the market for small EVs and lightweight single passenger vehicles that aren't three wheels, like a Polaris or something like that. Sure. Three wheelers. There's a market for stuff like that. Can the government? You have to have a motorcycle license to do that. Can the government get their head around adding another wheel? I mean, big deal. Yeah. What's the difference between four and three wheels? They would have to be able to permit. I think there's a market for high performance. Of course, I always look at like high performance stuff, right? So there's a market for super high performance, lightweight EVs with really good range. When you guys are in LA, I think. So when you go to work, I'm by myself in my car. I got three seats, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sitting by myself in my car. Why not just have one seat?
Uh-huh.
And I want it to look like a Formula One car. I don't want to mess around,
I have your answer, Jack, but the difference between three and four wheels, it's your dignity.
I would not, I mean, I like the Polaris and I like the three wheeler stuff. It's just, I look at that and I go, why don't I just buy a motorcycle?
Yeah, for sure.
Just get a bike.
Right.
But I think... Just to back up, just on that comment, there is, I know the Harleys, attempt at doing an electric motorcycle. I thought that was brilliant because it's the perfect platform. You take a motorcycle, you don't go out 400 miles on a bike. You can, but for me, it's uncomfortable to do that after a while. You go a couple hundred miles or a short commute on it. I think an electric motorcycle is a really, really, really great idea. When I go to the TT, the Isle of Man TT, and they have an electric motorcycle part of their TT program, and they're just about as fast as the gas ones. Mm. And the cool thing is you don't hear the engine, you hear the wind.
Oh, and, interesting.
Right, because they're a brick aerodynamically, essentially.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Behind them. And when I was there, it's been a couple of years because of COVID, but I think they were doing an average speed of 115 on the TT course, where the gas bikes were doing 132 or 130 miles an hour. So they're pretty dang. They're not as good on the hills as the gas bikes, but they're almost comparable. And it's still early.
Yeah,
The development and improvement on battery capacity is an ongoing. This is part of what I do at UC Berkeley. I don't teach the battery component. I teach powertrain. But the development of solid state and high capacity lithium batteries is, there's a lot of research and a lot of competition right now. Eventually, they're going to come out with a battery pack that weighs half as much with the same range.
Wow.
So that's ongoing. When that happens, it'll be more practical to have a vehicle, a motorcycle that has relatively short range, go 300 miles or something like that. So, it's coming. This is just the beginning. I went to the Detroit Auto Show. That was last week.
Okay.
That was last week. Yeah. I went to that and I was checking it out, and it's all a lot of electric stuff. Everyone's on to the electric thing, right now, because of regulation. I'm not sure.
Sure.
Everybody's claiming they're going to be all electric by 2030 or 2035. We'll see, but that's what everybody's supposedly shooting for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of inhibitors. First of all, the power grid and the infrastructure is just not there. I mean, we're built for petroleum,
right.
The entire society. If nuclear had not been clobbered by bad PR and a couple of some bad mistakes, then the infrastructure and the power capacity would be there quicker. But right now we're still burning coal and natural gas and then moving it on an electron pipe to everyone's house. It's just not there. And how are they going to pay to upgrade the entire system? I just don't see that happening. Just my view, quickly, but who knows? Knowing what I know about how quickly the, policy changes versus how quickly the implementation of that policy changes, I'd say that's not likely. It's just hard to get it to move.
Diametrically opposed, right? These are a lot of discussions we've had. We're with you on it.
Yeah, it's just there's a lot of inhibitors. Are electric vehicles more efficient? And the answer to that is, well, where do they get the electricity? They burn coal. There's an upward efficiency or of natural gas that's probably greater than an internal combustion burning it directly. There's a slight efficiency increase in a power plant than there is because they run at optimal power output. They're running at most maximum efficiency, which is pretty close to optimal power output, max power output, excuse me. Is there an efficiency trade-off? Well, the answer to that is that the EVs run around 54% efficiency. The best automobiles are 32% efficiency.
Okay.
So for all of those, it's heat. Yeah, it's a thermodynamics relationship that you can't really break.
Mm-hmm.
So is there an answer to that? And the answer is nuclear. If we had nuclear power, which is clean and reliable, environmentally friendly, we would probably be able to pay off the 2035 benchmark. We might meet that, but we don't have that in the country. And they're tearing out a power plant here in California right now. So it's just there's a lot of and in this country everything changes every 4 years. There's some new policy that comes in. Yeah. Who knows? But the automobile manufacturers are working on EVs. I love them. I just love the things. And I know they're not loud. I mean, what if you put speakers on the outside of a Tesla?
The original Fisker had this weird manufactured sound below 20 miles an hour. Yeah,
Freddie, our friend,
a composer we know in LA, actually produced that sound. He was actually composing the sound. It was just weird little warble, like a digital robot warble that it made below 20. I think that's going to continue. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Then it shut off at high speeds because, hopefully there's no pedestrians in your way above 25 miles an hour.
That's the problem. I've had people walk right in front of my car.
Oh,
they didn't hear it coming. It's not fast enough to hear the tire noise.
Sure.
You just don't hear anything.
And you can't blip the throttle.
don't do that. No.
Pipes save lives. You can't just gun the engine, get out of my way. You can't do that anymore.
No, you can't. But I think that, from a performance standpoint, if you're into performance, I think that, I think it's a great electric vehicles are great for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like a thunderously loud car that turns heads for, across the entire parking lot. And, that's what I like. I see the utility in EVs and I see are they environmentally friendly? Not quite. And you can tell yourself that you're helping the world or helping trees but really the mining of lithium, where it is, the fact that 30% of it's mined or processed by a country that we're not particularly friendly with.
Right.
These are, we have the same problem with petroleum, right? We need energy independence in this country. So another whole topic, but you have a lot of inhibitors and it's not environmentally friendly yet. Perhaps if we can figure out how to recycle old lithium ion batteries, the way they recycle them now is they put them in power banks to charge your phone. They're kind of spent, but not entirely. They're good for that. But to the raw recycling of lithium ion batteries and keeping them from going into landfill, would be if I were doing a startup company, I'd try to figure that out. It's worth gold.
There's a freebie for the audience. If you're into that, there's your startup option. Yeah.
Okay. So Jack, relate this to our audience, our car buying audience, and that is the car debate. People write to us from all over the world and say, hey, Todd, hey, Paul, what car do you think I should buy next? For people thinking about electric cars or wanting to adopt them maybe into their lives, or, you know, not everybody has 108 solar panels at their house.
Well, not everybody has a Lola or an Altima with a Rolls-Royce either, which I'm totally fascinated
by. For the car buying audience, and maybe I might consider one, and we've recommended used Bolts before, you know, the whole battery issue, but there's going to be continual battery issues, as you said. So how should the audience feel about, should I invest my hard-earned dollars into buying that? Should I incorporate a car into our family? Do I stick with what I know? Mm-hmm. What do you say to our audience?
I would say if you're in a rural area without large infrastructure, stick to your internal combustion engine, because it's going to be a long time before that part of the world gets populated with charging stations. That's the first thing. In urban areas, like parts of California, there's just ample charging stations that you can stop in. So, brand-wise, I think everyone's getting on board. Who's the company that's going to succeed is probably the company that has forward thinking. And, you know, Tesla is way ahead of everyone else. Mm-hmm. They have they just are software-wise. Personally, I don't care for the way the car operates. There's no start button on it. I have one. It drives me crazy when I get there and I have to pull out my phone and hold it onto part of the, I just think it's just not what I like to do. I like a key, you know, like a key fob. You push on the little button and it opens.
There's something to an event, a starting of a car in his event. I'm going to go do something. There's part of that is the magic.
Yeah. When you get out of the Tesla, you leave it on. I'm getting out and I go, it's not locking the steering wheel, you know, like, it's got anti-theft and it's still running. No, you just get out of it. I'm not going to get out of it. I want to turn it off. Yeah, right. You can get your head around that. The backup system on it, other parts of it are brilliant. I like a lot of it. It's just that really grates on me. I think bang for the buck. And the Bolt, I have one. I test drove a lot of EVs. The Bolt for $35,000 is a smoking deal. It is ugly as sin. It looks like a shoe.
I mean, it's not bad.
It's not. I wouldn't call it pretty though, Paul. Definitely not.
Okay, it's not pretty. It's not pretty. Fair enough.
It's not a pretty car, and it actually is fast.
It is.
I can smoke the front tires on it
for sure.
Yeah, I like to get people in it. It's like they think it's a dumpy little shoe car looking thing, and I get them in there. I go, watch this. I put it in sport mode and I nail the throttle and it spins the tires. They go, holy smokes.
Yeah,
well,
we
have a fan of the show whose soon to be wife, his fiance, got a Bolt, and she goes trolling. She was never really into cars, and she goes trolling from Mustangs at the stoplight.
Yeah, Mustangs. She just likes to, like, any kind of muscle car is like, goodbye.
Hit the hazards. It's on.
exactly. The starting torque. It's all software driven. The engine on the motor, electric motor on the Bolt, is completely controlled by software. Tesla's vehicles are software. It's a simple car. It's got a differential, disc brakes, and an induction motor on it, and a controller. It's all software driven. So, I mean, that's kind of what you're getting into. That's what's happened. The complexity of mechanical engineering is now shifted into software in a funny kind of a way, if you think about it. So it's all software driven. I'm happy with my Bolt. Can you drive it to LA from here? If you take Interstate 5, it's for your audience. It's a long, long drive. One charging station in Button Willow, little town. It's risky.
Fair.
You may end up needing a tow truck at some point. They need to improve the range on all electric vehicles. They need to go up to 450-mile range or whatever. That's what I would say. With the improvement in battery technology, which is coming, there's a lot of solid power. A lot of companies are working on solid-state batteries and batteries which have higher capacity.
And that is the next step that we see as well, you know, getting away from lithium as well.
Yeah, there you still might be entangled with, pardon the expression, with the lithium. But it may be a lithium compound or a solid lithium electrode or lithium sulfur batteries. A company called Litron working on lithium sulfur batteries for automotive. I met them at the Detroit Auto Show. So, by the way, Detroit's a nice town. I hate to burst anyone's bubbles. It's really come a long way. It's changed. I mean, I was there in the 80s, and it's just a scary place.
It's definitely come a long way.
Yeah. So, but you know, I would say that, you know, I'm kind of married to Chevy. I'm a Chevy guy, right? So I've got my Chevy Lola with the Chevy in it, and I have a Camaro, and my Model T had a Chevy, a Gen 1 small block in it. So
wow,
I'm a kind of a Chevy guy.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like in that camp, but I was surprised how well thought out and well engineered the vehicle whip is. I had a Caddy, an XTS I got rid of that I didn't like that much. It was just, you know, internal combustion engine car.
Yeah, sure.
But I'd say that Bolt is the best. If you're not in the high dollar thing and you don't want to spend a lot of money and you want low lease payments, that's a good option for you. And I get about 270 miles, it claims.
Wow. Okay.
But I think that's probably it's pretty good. It's real good compared to the Leaf. Remember the Leaf came out was 50 mile range.
Yeah, for sure. And they've updated it now. It's a little over 100, but it's still not a long way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, why would I buy a car with a 100 mile range? I don't know. The Leaf's got its fan base, right? There's people that are crazy about them.
Well, but I've said on the podcast before that I think the flip side of the equation is if for some reason you could charge right now for as long as it took you to get gas, then none of us would be worried about range. Mm-hmm. But since that's not possible, then the range is the offset.
That's right. And there's hope that these DC 300 amp chargers will be coming online. I have yet to see that. It's also hard on the battery to charge it that hard.
Mm, sure.
It's better to be easy on it. You know what would be cool is if you came home and you just park in your driveway and you came out in the morning, it was charged. Like, you didn't have to worry about the cable or anything like that, like plugging into the wall. A robot or something that would sense you coming in and plug it in for you. And you just get out. And it's always full.
Yeah, well, that Tesla weird snake thing from years ago. it's so weird.
Very
odd. Yeah, that would be an interesting idea. And then I heard other people saying, like, you can swap out battery. You don't want someone else's battery.
Agreed.
Don't know that it's being abused. Or,
totally. Yeah.
I abuse my battery and my Bolt probably, but so.
Battery abuse.
That's fascinating. Well, Jack, this has been awesome. Thank you for the breadth of commentary here. This is really, really fun.
Yeah. Any call to action for the audience, Jack? A white paper to read, something that can impart, you know, the knowledge that you've just shared.
Or just website or stuff you want to share. We're up for all of it.
I don't have it in front of me, but I can share some interesting tidbits. If you want to find out who's working on battery technology, of course, Tesla is a lithium ion manufacturer. They manufacture a cell for the Model S.
They need to work on the panel gaps and aligning their rear hatches before I.
You know that exactly. That's what I noticed. I noticed the thing is like poor body alignment.
Yeah,
and it just screams at me that they're new to building vehicles.
Well, that's the first thing. Not Ferrari from the 60s and get away with asymmetry. Yeah. Symmetry's overrated.
It's not a handmade body. And also the Model Y, the gasket that goes around the doors, it rots. I'm looking at that. I look at one, it's like 3 years old and it's all cracked and stuff. And I'm going, I mean, can't they hire a guy from VW or GM who knows about rubber compounding?
Exactly.
I went over there. I was looking at another car, a new Data Maso that came out. I was interested in buying it, but lots of people around here work at Tesla. There's a lot of folks that work there and it's a high stress environment, but you know, they're like bleeding edge stuff. So tidbits, I can forward you some, if you'd like to read about EV technology, some websites, and I also owe you my YouTube link there.
For sure, we'd love to see it.
We'll share that on social, but thank you so much. We'd love the conversation. We just, you know, I think it's the same thing that people in your classes hear, you know, this knowledge that you've got and imparting that to help people think differently, but still relate it to our car disease and the wanting of sound and the wanting of fun driving.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It is a disease.
We call it that all the time.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm infected.
Well, we're thrilled that all of us talking and listening are all about it too. So, Jack, we really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Hey, it's been awesome, guys. Good luck. Thank you.
Wow, phenomenal. Jack, thank you so much again for coming on. We really appreciate it. If you've got thoughts on the episode, we're looking forward to having more guests in the future. We're definitely trying to get back to that, but hopefully you enjoyed the whole session with Jack, and we'd love to have him back anytime. Looking forward to your Topic Tuesdays, your car conclusions, and most importantly, your car debates, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com. Thanks, guys. Cheers, everyone.